Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. I think we're going to have a very interesting show today, folks, because there's quite a bit to talk about. There hasn't been a ton of really wrestling news, but I thought we'd get into some very unique aspects of professional wrestling. One of them being, what exactly is missing? From a fan's perspective, what exactly is missing in pro wrestling? Because we can put our heads in the sand like an ostrich and saying everything's great with wrestling, it's the best time in wrestling history. It's not, folks. In some aspects, maybe it is, in the sense that there's more places for workers to ply their trade. There's more wrestling on television for people to watch. We have the internet, so we can keep up with federations that normally wouldn't be on TV. I understand all that. But then what's missing? Because less people are watching. So we're going to get into that a little bit. We're going to talk SmackDown and the big news that Roman Reigns fires Paul Heyman on television. We're going to get to that. We're going to talk and discuss who may be next to go in the WWE, because there's some strong rumors that some people are not very happy at all. So we'll get into that a little bit. And we're going to start the show with a report on the wrestler, the Bloodhunter, Hannibal, Devin Nicholson, actually made a comment, a long comment on what he says happened during this incident in which a referee was hospitalized with a bunch of stitches and staples in his head after what some people were saying was a purposeful attack on the referee. So we'll talk about what he had to say. Before we get started with that, I just want to say this. I've had a lot of people ask me, when are you going to do the answer the mailbag thing that you guys used to do? I send in questions and they're not being answered. And, you know, sometimes you answer them on the show, but you don't say our names, whatever. Here's the problem. But if you do send a comment or a question, please try to make it not time conducive, because by the time we get it and we get around to do the show, either the question's been answered or it's a question that doesn't need answering anymore. And, you know, if you want to ask us who would we hire or fire from the WWE, what do we think the future is for this or that? But if you say, what did you think of this particular thing on Raw, we don't get the question until it's too late, and then I'm not going to go back three Raws to talk about it. So please, if you're going to submit the questions, make them not time constraint type questions, and I'll be glad to do it. We do have a decent number of questions I'd like to get to. We will do it very soon, I promise. After the new year, for sure, we will do it. Anyway, Hannibal, Devin Nicholson, made a long comment. He initially made a very poor and a very short comment, but he's made a much longer comment now. And I don't know whether he's had time to think about it or he's had time to consult a lawyer. And I'm not here to tell you who's wrong or who's right. But I'm going to tell you this. I think the wrestling, you know, people are saying we jumped the gun with Jeff Hardy. Well, I think people might have jumped the gun a little bit on Devin Nicholson, and I'll tell you why. There is no doubt that he took that spike and hit the referee several times in the head with it. He doesn't deny it either. But the wrestling world is really jumping on him, saying he should be banned from the sport. He did it on purpose. The only reason he did it was the referee wasn't successful in his blading effort, and he got mad and thought he was looking poor. And so he just said, F you, I'll do it my way. And a lot of people are saying a lot of things. And a lot of people are getting all over him. And, you know, it's starting to bother me a little bit, because I'm hearing these people who are so anti-bully, right? They're so anti-whatever, saying, oh, he's a goofball. He talks like this. He's like a barbarian. Oh, wait a minute. I thought you guys are all these woke don't do this to people type thing. Oh, it's okay because there was something happened, right? Now, I'm not saying he didn't do it on purpose because I don't know the man. What I am going to tell you is this. I hear people like Jim Cornette and other people saying, well, you know, fans are saying this and that, and unless you've been in the ring, well, I've been in the ring. And I bladed myself 1,000 times. And I've even bladed people once or twice. And I'm going to tell you that what he said in this clip does make sense. I'm sorry if that pisses people off. I'm sorry if you want to say he's a bastard, he did it on purpose, well, whatever. I'm telling you what he said on this tape makes sense. So let's get a few things straight. First, they're saying he's not a trained guy. Nobody trained him. He's just some guy who pays promoters to book him on a card. Okay, well, he might be paying promoters to book him on a card, but what he's saying now in this is, well, yeah, I definitely paid my opponent and I paid the referee, but I was also helping finance other wrestlers on that card. It was almost like a co-promotion. Well, that makes things a little different then, doesn't it, if that's the truth? He's released emails and text messages, which he showed, where the promoters clearly knew what he was going to do. They clearly knew the spot. Now, they didn't know it was going to be him pounding a spike into somebody's head, but they knew the referee was going to blade. They knew there was a blood spot coming up. The most important thing is this. He is trained. He was trained by Jacques Rougeau. He was trained by one of the Harts. I think it was Bruce Hart. And he positively, absolutely is a trained wrestler. So get that out of the way. He's not some... He's not some YouTuber who never trained and just did backyard stuff and jumped into the ring. That's not true. That's not true. Jacques Rougeau clearly takes great pride in saying he trained him and that he's one of his best students. So that's number one. Number two, yes, they knew what the spot was coming up. Number three, he says, when I said I had mesh over the eyes of my mask, the wrestling world said, oh, you had mesh over the eyes of your mask all every time you ever fought. What are you saying? You can't see when you wrestle? He said, that's not at all what I was saying. What I was saying was, because of the angle I had the referee and the mesh over the eyes, when I looked down and I had my fist there, I couldn't see. I assumed he had bladed and it worked. And I was trying to pound his forehead with my fist to get the blood flowing more so it looked good. This referee had told him, I am going to bleed like you've never seen before. There's going to be blood flying everywhere. So he was trying to help the guy achieve that. And he said, I did not realize that the spike was sticking out enough so that the impact, it was actually touching flesh. I didn't know it. He didn't cry out in pain. He didn't do anything other than what I thought was selling. I felt the blood, but I thought the blood was coming from the cut he had already made. And it was just increasing because I was pounding it. He even went so far as to do exactly what I told you on this show people do. The referee said, I'm going to take an aspirin. I used to take an aspirin. It thins your blood. So basically, Hannibal says, I thought that I was just pounding the area of the forehead to get the blood to come out more. He said, now referees are supposed to jump in and haul me off. Nobody did. So he said, as far as how many times I'm pounding him in the head, I'm waiting for the referees to come in. They all said, we're going to have referees come in and haul you off. There was none. They all sat on the outside of the ring. His girlfriend, who was his valet, was ultimately going to be the one who came in and hauled him off. And he said, if I was out of control, if they're trying to claim I went nuts, I went mental, and I just started saying, I'm going to kill him. He said, if that was the case, then how come a 100-pound girl pulled me off? My girlfriend's 100 pounds soaking wet. He said, the reason she pulled me off is she was supposed to pull me off. It was all in the script. The referees didn't jump in like they were supposed to. So she just finally said, well, I'm just going to go for it. The referees aren't coming. The referees aren't jumping in, so I'm going to just have to go to my spot and jump in and grab him. He can't just keep pounding him forever. That point is well taken. He then said, I was supposed to attack one of the guys at ringside, which I did. He said, if I was out of control, how come nobody threw up the X sign? How come nobody threw up the referee's hurt sign so that I could say, uh-oh, something happened to the ref? Okay, never mind the rest of the spots then. Let me just get to the back and let them take care of him. Nobody did. He said, watch the tape. Do you see anybody throwing up an X sign? Do you see Kevin Sullivan? Do you see any of the people at ringside? Any of the officials throwing up a sign letting me know somebody's really hurt? No. So I assume everything's going great. I don't even know the guy's hurt. I know he's bleeding bad, but I don't know he's hurt. I went on and actually fought the people on the outside of the ring like I was supposed to. I left when I was supposed to. Now, this does contradict what World Class Wrestling says, because the announcer says when he threw one of the guys, he asked the guy, he asked the guy that got thrown, is that a work or a shoot? And he said, it's a shoot. Get him out of here. Meaning that Hannibal did go nuts and throw the guy into the guardrail against his will. I watched it. That was a work throwing into the guardrail, and any idiot could see it. The other thing was, the referee couldn't talk because he was choking him out. He put him in a chokehold and reared back. It was a real chokehold. Wrong. Watch the tape very closely. He doesn't even have him around the neck, and he's not applying any pressure. It's not true for this guy. I'm just telling you the truth, and it's not true. He didn't put him in a chokehold and rear back and render him unconscious and unable to speak. That's simply not true. And then the other thing that's not true is they said, well, he refused to take responsibility for it. He said, I immediately contacted him and said, I'm so sorry this happened. And he said, look, I have the text messages from him saying there's no hard feelings. It's not your fault. Shit happens. However, I've incurred some medical bills for pills and pain, whatever. And I guess they don't have any insurance, so I might need a little more money than the money you paid me to do the job. And apparently Devin Nicholson said, well, how much do you need? And he said, probably around $200. And he said, I sent him $500. Now he raises a very good question. He said, this referee, who I 100% think is a good guy and did the best he could, and I feel terribly sorry for him. And I realize I messed up, and I realize I hurt him, and I feel like crap about it. Some insurance for himself. He said, he told me the medical bills are only going to come to like $500, maybe a grand tops. This would be my deductible, I guess, is like $500 or $600. He said, I paid it. Why is there a GoFundMe for $10,000? Who ever heard of medical bills coming to $10,000? For getting staples in your head. Now, apparently he had to go back because there was a blood infection. And some people were saying that's because Hannibal has hepatitis from his fight with Abdul the Butcher. That's overblown too. Apparently it comes from some kind of gold paint or something that had gotten into the bloodstream. After, you got to be careful. When you're bleeding, you got to be a little careful. You get a blood infection pretty easy if you're dicking around with that too much. That's not going to be $10,000. I don't know why there's a $10,000. He has a very good point. Why is there a $10,000 GoFundMe for something like that? Just out of sympathy? I got hurt. Give me $10,000. Where's this going? Well, you have qualified professional wrestlers saying you should be banned from the business. Well, wait a minute. You handed him the weapon. Not that that's an excuse, because if you hand me a fork, I'm going to make sure the fork don't hit the guy's head for real. He's saying, that is my fault. That's on me. I thought I had it in the palm of my hand enough so that there was no way that blade was coming out the bottom. The point. And I was wrong. As far as seeing the blood, I thought he bladed. You could clearly see the guy bladed. It just didn't work. He tucked the blade in his pocket. You can watch. I'm pounding his head. Blood's starting to flow. I'm thinking, okay, he bladed and it's working. Here comes the blood. Let me pound it a few more times. I'm looking around saying, where's the referees? It's supposed to jump in. So I just keep pounding them. Where's the referees? It's supposed to jump in. There isn't any. Finally, my girlfriend jumps in. And again, his point is well taken. If at this point I'm a raging maniac who's out to kill somebody, how is it that a 100-pound girl pulls me off? And how is it that 5 minutes later I'm following the, not even 5 minutes, 1 minute later I'm following the script, throwing the guy into the guardrail, you know, kayfabe, throwing him into a guardrail and yelling and screaming and delivering some hits that are obviously, you know, worked stuff. Wouldn't I be going crazy? Wouldn't everybody be jumping on me? Wouldn't security be hauling me out? I've listened to both sides of this story. It is a terrible thing what happened to the referee, and there is no excuse for not knowing that the blade is coming out the bottom of your hand. It is your fault. But to suggest he went nuts and did it on purpose, and to suggest that nothing like this has ever happened to pro wrestling, it's terrible, he's a maniac. I'm sorry, Mike, I'm going to go against the wrestlers and the wrestling industry this time. I think his explanation is a good one.
I think his explanation is a fine one to me. And look, you're saying people are going, well, he wasn't trained good enough. Well, not only do you have to look at his trainers, but you've got to look at who trained his trainers. And Bruce Hart was trained by the best. He was trained, wasn't he trained in the dungeon? The Hart dungeon?
I would imagine.
Yeah, so if you're looking at the trainer's trainer, well, I mean, he's got some of the best training that's Hannibal in the world. So, I mean, think about it. So you can't blame the guy's trainers, all right? You can't blame – if what you're saying is true and the referees were supposed to jump in and then his girlfriend was going to jump in, well, if the referees don't jump in and his girlfriend's – making the rationalization in her head that, well, these guys aren't coming, so I'm going to have to do it. I got to go on to my spot in this thing. Then fine, you know. Then fine. She's doing what she's supposed to do. So, and most women, you know, Hannibal's probably 200 pounds or more. Maybe a little bit less. Maybe, I don't
he's
know.
Almost, he's still, well, Hannibal's almost 300 pounds.
Oh, he's almost 300 pounds. So,
yeah, he's a big
okay,
dude.
So he's almost 300 pounds, and she's, what, 100, maybe 105 pounds, maybe?
Right. Yeah.
You
That's
know,
his
so
point.
You got a 100 pound woman getting trying to pull off a 300 pound man. That, I mean, in the world of wrestling, we're supposed to suspend our disbelief, right? All right. If you're asking me to suspend my disbelief on that, fine, I'll do that because now that I know what's supposed to have happened, right? That was her spot, was to get in there and pull him off, or help pull him off anyway. So I'm willing to suspend my disbelief on that. So
right. All
these other people who are saying, all these other naysayers who are saying, it's all Hannibal's fault. No, it is not Hannibal's fault. There's certain things that are Hannibal's fault, you know, that, you know, he couldn't tell. And look, I've seen different masks. You talk about the mesh in front of the mask. There are different people who are wearing different types of masks that have, like, sunglasses sewn into the mask and all this
right. Stuff
where you're looking at that mask, and how can they see through those sunglasses to see what they're doing good enough, you know? So I get
Well, see,
that.
A lot of these wrestlers' point is, well, you wore that mask all the time. Now you're saying, well, I couldn't see through it. Well, no, that's not what he said. He's saying, I could see through the mask when I was fighting Carlito. I could see through the mask fine. But when I had my head tilted down, looking at this guy that I have on this angle, I couldn't see. The mesh was interfering with my ability to see whether there was a wound or something. And he wasn't yelling. He didn't like yell out where I was like, uh-oh, that sounded like a real yell or, you know, something. He makes some good points. You know, everybody's saying, oh, this guy's an idiot. He's a primitive. He's a slack jaw and he's this and he's that. I'll tell you what I think. And it's very unpopular because 95% of the wrestling community is ready to pounce on this guy. I'll tell you what I think. I think they're jealous. And I'll tell you why I think they're jealous, because he's got a ton of viewers on his channel, and he gets a lot of these wrestlers who he does pay. And then they said, well, he's such a mark, he has to pay wrestlers to come on his show to talk to him. I got a newsflash for you. All of these people who do these shoot interviews, they get paid to do them. These guys ain't sitting around for 2 hours doing shoot interviews for people for free. So it doesn't matter. That does not matter. Yeah, he may be getting, he may pay people to be on the card, but he's co-promoting it. So basically he's saying, well, I want to try to promote my own. He has some kind of federation up in Canada, I guess. So to be perfectly honest with you, I think that a lot of these people are saying, look, he's got a, you know, million views on some of his videos and things. We don't. And, you know, maybe there's, I'm not talking to, look, when The Miz was shanghaied at TMZ in the airport and The Miz said, this guy should be banned, The Miz is walking through an airport. They're showing him a video very quickly on a phone and they're saying, this guy did this on purpose and look what he did to the referee. And The Miz says, well, if that's the case, he should be banned for life. Yeah, that's absolutely correct. The Miz is right. But he doesn't know the details at this point. So you can't say, oh, well, The Miz said, well, The Miz didn't know the details. And I can guarantee you that if he sat down and we talked about it and I just gave you this routine, he would say that is possible to happen. You think I've never been busted open a hard way? You think somebody never did something to me that hurt me? And I never said, oh, well, you freaking did that on purpose. It happens all the time. Now, this referee's head looked bad. I'm not going to lie to you. Hannibal was hitting him hard with his fist. But if you do have a little point of that spike sticking out of the bottom of your fist and you're not aware of it, and you hit him really hard with it, that thing could cause some damage, and apparently it did. Apparently it did. But the lies that you're being told are, A, he's not trained, incorrect, he is trained. B, he did it on purpose. Nothing indicates he did it on purpose. Then we had he was stumbling around the ring and he appeared drunk. I watched the whole entire match with Carlito. He was not stumbling around the ring. He did not appear drunk. The match was fine. Then we heard it was a horrible, terrible match. Carlito had to end it early. I didn't see anybody ending it early. It was like 9 minutes. How long did you want him to go? 50, 60 minutes? It was like 8 or 9 minutes. Everything worked out apparently the way it was supposed to, as far as, put it this way, Devin Nicholson, if this was the case and Devin Nicholson was so out of his mind and Carlito wanted to end it early, where Nicholson takes his girlfriend and throws over the top rope on top of Carlito. He's obviously trusting Carlito to catch her. He's obviously trusting himself to throw her well. She wasn't injured. So at some point, they're cooperating very well. If I was in the ring with a drunk guy, I'd say I ain't doing that spot. I'm not doing that spot. We're just getting out of here in 3 minutes. Well, what happened when Sting and Jeff Hardy were in the ring and Jeff Hardy was out of his mind? Did they go 9, 10, 12 minutes? No. So he wasn't drunk. And what bothers me is when a federation says things like this and there's nothing to back it up. Now, I know their announcer was on a radio show saying, I'm telling you, I smell liquor, and he was this, and I know that the one guy told me he's not it's not kayfabe, he's really shooting on me. I'm sorry, dude. I don't know, man. I'm watching this match, and I don't see that. I think everybody panicked. I think your federation realized we don't have any paramedics on hand, which a lot of federations require that you do. A lot of states require you have paramedics on hand. We don't have any paramedics on hand, and we don't have any insurance. And a guy just got hurt, and we're screwed. And I know how that feels. But you can't point your finger at some dude and say, yeah, we have nothing to do with him. It's all him. You can't ruin a man's life and his reputation just because you have some issues. Now, he says he resigned from that federation because they owed him money, and on top of that, nothing went right that night, and he felt like they didn't handle it right. They say they fired him. There's no time stamp on the stuff, so nobody knows what happened first. All I know is this. This is a guy who is being lied about on purpose because I have videotapes of this man, Devin Nicholson, fighting Eugene on WWE's main event and a few other WWE superstars. So you're going to tell me that Jim Cornette and the wrestling business doesn't know that he was in the WWE actually as a worker for a short period of time? Do you hire untrained people? So you're telling me, well, he wasn't trained. Well, wait a minute. I'm watching him fight Eugene. So you let an untrained guy into a WWE ring? Is that what you're trying to tell me? Why are you lying? See, when people lie, then I don't believe anything they say. So when you sit here and tell me he's an untrained wrestler who just has a YouTube channel, thinks he's trying to be a wrestler, he's trying to cosplay as a wrestler, that's not true. And if you're going to tell me shit that's not true, why should I believe anything you say? So as bad as I feel for this referee, as bad as I feel for this federation whose event was ruined, I feel for everybody involved. You can't point the finger at just Hannibal and say it's all his fault because he's a barbarian, he's a primitive, he's dumb, and he's selfish, and he hurt a man on purpose because he felt like his ego had been bruised. None of that, there's no evidence of any of that. None. Anyway, folks, let's get on to some other news here. Rhea Ripley apparently made a statement that she was looking to get out of the WWE. She said, in effect, from what I'm hearing, she feels her character was ruined. She feels she no longer wants to play this character, which I never really knew what the character was supposed to be. Even in NXT, I wasn't 100% sure. Is she supposed to be like a Mad Max, you know, Thunderdome type thing? Or is she supposed to be a punk rocker or a goth or a, I don't know, metal? I don't know what she's supposed to be. That's number one. So I never thought they did a good job of fleshing out what she was supposed to be. But I guess she's supposed to be this tough, gothy, punk, post-punk, whatever the hell it happens to be. She says this character is completely ruined by the WWE. There is no saving it, and I don't even want to play it anymore. And apparently she went and said, let me grow my hair out, because I don't like my hair this way anymore. She says it's not even conducive to what the character is. She said whatever the character is, a gothy, whatever, it just doesn't work anymore. So let me grow my hair out, do something different, and they said no. And she says, at this stage, my character is, I don't even know what my character is. And I don't like it, and it's not working, and I'm stuck with it, apparently. And she said that she wanted her release. They're not going to give it to her. They're not going to give it to her. But when you have somebody this high profile saying what we have said for a long, long period of time on this show, you cannot continually ruin someone's character and expect them to be happy. This is what happened with Bray Wyatt. This is what happened with Elias. This is what happened with some other people. Now, Elias isn't released, but still, this is what happens when you ruin someone's character. To be in the WWE, you really had no choice. If you said, my character is, I'm a badass biker dude, and I come rolling in on a Harley and have, you know, studded leather jacket on and a Live Free or Die shirt and all this kind of stuff, and they say, well, tomorrow you're going to be the Energizer Bunny. We're putting you in a pink and a bunny suit, and you're going to hop down to the ring with a carrot in your mouth. You have no choice. You have no choice. Or if they say, well, you're a badass biker dude, but you're going to get beat up by this girl, or you're going to get beat up by this manager, or you're going to get beat up by a preliminary wrestler. You've got no choice. The game has changed a little bit now, and there's a lot of places for people to work. And these people aren't afraid, I'll lose my job, I'll lose my position, I'll lose my dream of being a WWE superstar, and that's all I ever really wanted to be, so regardless of what I'm going to be, I'll just be it. Some people say, no, I'm not doing it. I'll go elsewhere, and they'll treat me better. I'll protect my character. Certain people will protect their character. We're going to go back in history a little bit and talk about that, with how Roddy Piper did that a couple of times and things, but most people aren't in position to do that. A Roddy Piper was. But most people can't do it. Now you can. to a large extent. And now people are, because they're thinking about my life past WWE, and they're saying, if I do get released, I don't want my character to look weak and horrible and terrible and easily beaten and all kinds of stuff, and I'm not going to ruin my reputation here. Now, with Rhea Ripley being unhappy, I told you she was biting the big one on the main roster. Told you that from the beginning. Now, did she do herself any favors? No. She did not. She was one of the most unlikable people to debut in WWE. Whether it's her fault or not, I don't know. All I know is when she first came up to the main roster, she was extremely unlikable. She was not that unlikable in NXT. She seemed okay in NXT, but she seemed very unsure of herself. She seemed very deer in the headlight-ish situation when she got to the WWE. And quite frankly, it looked as though she was confused about what they wanted from her or what they wanted her to do. She came off more as a heel than a face, and then a face, and then a heel, and then a heel, and then a face. She didn't have any idea what was happening. And at this stage of the game, nobody's buying it anymore. Nobody's buying that she's this goth metal, whatever that. Nobody's buying it. And she understands very clearly, because she's an intelligent woman, nobody's buying this. And if nobody's buying it, what the hell am I out there trying to sell it? So, Todd, I think there's a problem here. If Rhea Ripley feels this way, you know there are others, and we're going to discuss them in a minute, but this is a bad situation.
Well, you're absolutely, excuse me. You're absolutely right there, like you said, that this is a bad situation right here with Rhea Ripley. Like you said, she wants out of her WWE contract. She wanted, didn't like where the character's going. It wasn't like that when she was in NXT.
See, that's the problem. Why are these people, if these people were so unhappy with the WWE's business model, how come they weren't unhappy in NXT? This is a problem. Now, we can speculate and say, well, where's this going with somebody like Alexa Bliss? Where's this going with somebody like Nikki Cross? If we're just staying in the women's division, Nikki Cross wanted to do this superhero gimmick. She thought it would be a good idea, and apparently it was, because it got her the women's championship for a while. But clearly that ship has sailed. And clearly they're going to have some sort of a breakup between her and Rhea Ripley. On the other side of the fence, Alexa Bliss was given Bray Wyatt's gimmick. Bray Wyatt left. She was stranded with a gimmick that had no real leader to it, or decided to pull that away for at least temporarily. I don't know when she comes back if she's still going to have it. I doubt it. They're still selling Lily dolls in the WWE shop zone. But what is she going to go back to? Is she going to go back to this goddess deal of I'm a pretty spoiled, arrogant brat? That wasn't working. It was not really working. And the problem is, neither was her I'm possessed by whatever working, because you jumped the shark with it. You went too far with it. And you got to a point with it where people were just saying, yeah, I don't believe this anymore. So, Mike, they have a reputation for ruining people's characters. But I guess my point is, now these workers have options. And some of them now are being very vocal. I know Deanna Purrazzo said, listen, I was fired basically because I was so vocal. I would come up with ideas and say, why can't I do this? How come I can't do that? Why don't we end the match this way so I can start a feud with this person? I was actively campaigning for my own career, saying I want something here. I don't want to just go out and get squashed in a minute. That's not why I became a professional wrestler. And why would you pay me to do that when there's so much more we can do? I think some of these wrestlers are kind of waking up and saying, we don't have to settle for this. And because they know they don't have to settle for it, this puts the WWE in a bad position.
Right. And that's the thing. If you really look at it, they're right. And she's right to think this way. What's her name is right to think this way, that you're not going to you're giving me. And think about this. Here's something else to think about. She is Rhea Ripley, much like most of the women's division, is a Triple H person. Yeah, she started out in NXT UK, sure. But she made her bones under Triple H, right? So
yeah.
She's a Triple H person. So how many of the Triple H people have been unhappy as of late?
Yeah, it seems like a great deal of them. See, this is where the problem lies. If you're saying, well, Alexa Bliss is going to get a character change and perhaps that's going to hurt her, maybe she's not going to be happy. Maybe Nikki Cross is not going to be happy. These are qualified professional wrestlers. These are good talents that the WWE cannot afford to just keep ruining. Now, I got a news flash for you. If you're 7 foot tall and 345 pounds and you're getting beat up every week on television like Shanky is, you have to think to yourself, is there nothing better out there for me? How come? What more do I have to do? Plus, he took a hell of an ass-whooping one time from Drew McIntyre. See, when I had some say in how a wrestling federation ran, when I got to that point with who I was working with, where I had a little bit of say, if I saw someone take that kind of a beating, I'd say, that's somebody you could maybe use, because they're willing to do some stuff. It was the people who said, I ain't doing this, and I don't want to do that, and I'm not going to go out there in this way, and I want my match to be this first or whatever, I don't want to go, and I want to work with this one, and I don't want to dress this way, and I don't want to do that. Those are the people that you say, God, forget it. You know, if you're worried about getting a hair out of place, maybe professional wrestling isn't for you. But this Shanky guy comes in, I want some more you want from him. He said he's a monster. 7 foot tall. Yeah, he's green. Is he greener than almost? And I'm saying to myself, why do you even bother? I mean, you brought back Jinder Mahal. Monsters, really. The one guy's so big, he makes Veer look small, but Veer's not small. And Jinder Mahal is not small by any stretch of the imagination. And I said to myself, geez, when I first seen him back, I'm like, well, my God. I mean, you got three monsters here. And rather than to promote him that way and say, look, I mean, do you see the size of that one guy? But Jinder Mahal's a huge man and looks like a kid compared to Shanky. These guys are going to be trouble. Now, they got to be jabrons. They're going to be idiots. And then you take them away from each other and say, well, Veer is coming to do what? You're going to make him the tough guy and Shanky's doing what? Teaming up with Jinder Mahal and losing to everybody? When he's 7 foot tall and will take an ass whooping, you know, on request? Because those chair shots that Drew McIntyre gave him, yeah, they weren't 100%, you know, they weren't exactly what I would call, you know, potato shots, but he was hitting them. You saw the guy's back, right? You can't use that guy? Why? Why in the world can't you use that guy? And if you're that guy, you can't be happy. You say, well, I don't know, man. I went in there and I said, I'll take 46 chair shots from Drew McIntyre. When the fourth one, I'm sure, hurt. And I'm still nobody. And I'm probably always going to be nobody. Because nobody's going to believe that all of a sudden, one day, out of the clear blue sky, this guy who couldn't beat anybody suddenly becomes a monster who nobody can beat. Nobody's going to believe that. The only gimmick I have is my size. The only gimmick I have is that I'm a huge monster. And if you take that away from me and say he's huge, but he's not much of a fighter, then there's nothing you can do. Other guys, you could keep changing their gimmick because they got a million things you can do with them. It's like an actor. If you're a 7 foot tall guy and you're an actor, you're only going to get a certain amount of roles. You're not going to get the role as somebody's dad that goes to a PTA meeting. You're not going to get the role as, you know, a softball coach. You're not going to get the role as the romantic lead in a romantic comedy. You're not going to get those. You're going to get some big bodyguard monster. That's what you're going to get. You're going to get this is the boss's enforcer. That's what you're going to get. Well, it's the same way with wrestling. This guy's got one gimmick. And you're taking it away from him. And then you say, well, you're not getting over. Well, how do you want him to get over? He's 7 foot tall. He's 300 and some odd pounds. For God's sake, he should be squashing people. Nope. So now you have some trouble. And you say to yourself, well, who's going to leave? Well, who's the people who said I've just about had enough? Well, I'll tell you, we can speculate. I'm saying that Nikki Cross, we're going to have to see. Her husband's no longer in the Federation. It doesn't look like they got any major plans for her, really. I'm a little bit concerned, even though she said she's coming back. I'm a little bit concerned about what they're going to do going forward with several, really, of the women. And they can't afford to lose the women because they know where the women will go. See, at this point, they can afford to lose some of the guys because I think after this Kevin Owens thing, they said to themselves, well, AEW's not going to sign everybody. Because if they were, they'd have threw big money at Kevin Owens. But the women, they will. They definitely will. So that's why they're not releasing Rhea Ripley. And they probably won't release Nikki Cross. I don't know what her contract is. We know Charlotte's up and down with what she wants to do. Especially now that apparently her and Andretti are fine. I don't know what the situation was, but that's what I'm hearing. So we don't know what Charlotte wants to do. Asuka's approaching, you know, she's in her 40s, right? She's just 40 or just turned 40, and she's been out with an injury, and we don't know what she's going to do. Liv Morgan asked for her release a while ago, and now suddenly her contract's coming up, and they're trying to use her. See, this is what the WWE does. They forget about you. Oh, yeah, we have her under contract. She's just getting squashed every week. She says she's leaving. Throw her in a title storyline. Give her a lot of airtime until she signs. And then once she signs, go back to just dropping matches and losing. Well, Sami Zayn's coming up on a contract, and we haven't used him except being a goofy comedy idiot. Put him in a title picture and give him some time with Brock Lesnar on TV, and that'll satisfy him. And he'll resign, and then he'll go back to being obscure. They did it with Cesaro. They've done it with Kevin Owens. When Kevin Owens' contract came up, all of a sudden, I'm right in contention for the belt. So, Mike, this is their modus operandi. They do it all the time, but the wrestlers are getting wise to it.
And look, here's the deal. Liv Morgan is still close with Ruby Soho. And I would assume she's still close with Sarah Logan, but it seems like Sarah Logan doesn't want to be a wrestler anymore, so throw her away. But she's still close with Ruby Soho, and, you know, Ruby Soho might vary if Liv Morgan gets out of her contract. She may very well go to AEW. And look, like I said before, AEW could stand some more of maybe one or two more of the female wrestlers to with name recognition to get, or facial recognition anyways, to get into their federation, because, yeah, they got a few, but not enough, right? And hell, we know what's going to happen in probably, I don't know, couple years, maybe a year, maybe, depending on how long Charlotte's contract is, because it seems like they're like you said, they're up and down with Charlotte, you know, and It's hard to gauge with Charlotte if she's happy or if she's not, you know. But apparently, I mean, I go back to her trademarking and copywriting other names, like she knows she's not going to be there at some point. Right. So you got to figure that she has a good idea. And look, we've said it before. If what we think is going to happen happens, and Triple H and Stephanie and possibly Shane divest themselves of their WWE stock and become billionaires and stuff like that, and they end up starting their own federation, then what? Then if Nikki Cross and Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair and Sonya Deville and the rest of them get cut from the WWE, where do you think they're going to go?
Listen, there is an opportunity there, and I've said that before. There's an opportunity there. But there's also an opportunity for AEW, because if AEW were to sign Rhea Ripley, if they were to sign Alexa Bliss, if they were to sign even a Nikki Cross, that's big. That's why the WWE is not letting go of the women. They know that. At this point, they'll let go a couple of the men because they'll say, how many are they going to sign? The dressing room's so full, they don't use people for months at a time. And they know that, too. AEW has reached this point where they're very well aware of that. They're very well aware that some other people are griping and saying, I'm not getting enough airtime and stuff. So they're not going to be too anxious to sign too many more people. The women, they will. And we'll see where this goes. If I had to bet, I would keep a very, very close eye on not only Rhea Ripley, I would keep a close eye on Nikki Cross, perhaps Dana Brooke. I'd watch Cesaro. Some of those people who are just, there's really no reason to continue doing this unless you're just in it for the money, which, again, we've talked about before, you know, some people are. Now, going way, way back, when the WWE released Matt Cardona and Curt Hawkins, Zack Ryder, that is, and Curt Hawkins, what did I say? I said, this sends a horrible, horrible message to the locker room. And that is, when you've outlived your usefulness, even though you're not really making a ton of money, we may just get rid of you. We have no loyalty to how long you've put in or how many people you've put over for us or what you've done. Everyone in that locker room looked at Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins as, these guys are valuable, because they send us a message. And the message is, no matter how ridiculous our roles are, no matter what we're asked to do, whether we're at the main event or down in the bottom just doing jobs for people, the WWE respects it, and we'll always have a position here, and we'll be taken care of, and our future is secure. When you let those two guys go, suddenly eyes were opened up and they were like, wait a minute. I mean, these guys forsook their own dreams of being major, major, major stars and resigned themselves to, I'll just help this company because you're financially going to make sure I'm fine for virtually the rest of my life, and you were cast aside. So if they're cast aside, I certainly can be. And that woke some people up. I knew it was a mistake. Had I been on their board of directors at the time, I would have said, these are the last two guys in the world you want to let go. It's going to send a horrible, horrible message to the locker room. And I was right. And now people are saying, I'll get out before they do it to me. That's not what you want. That's not what you want. Now, God forbid they end up signing somebody like an Asuka, who probably wouldn't at her age, but maybe. Who knows? God forbid they sign her or somebody like that. And, oh my God, I mean, the WWE has to really sit back for a moment and think about this very carefully and say, we have workers who are unhappy. We have fans who are unhappy. We have sent a bad message to the locker room. Our work environment is not good right now. How do we correct this? Because once you correct that, then you'll start to correct your product on the air. You really will. Isn't it funny how Kevin Owens was looking like, well, I don't even want to come out here and do anything. His matches were lethargic. His mic work was horrible. He wasn't even trying. He was stumbling over his words. He's just, he didn't even know what he wanted to say half the time. Suddenly he gave him something to do, and he's back to being the old Kevin Owens. Well, amazing, right? Amazing. Now, I know everybody can't be the star of the show, but what you've got to do is you've got to clearly define the roles, and you've got to tell those people at the bottom, you're just as important as the people on the top. See, that's where the problem is. When you fired Ryder and Hawkins, you said, no, the people on the bottom aren't important. So then there's no point of you sticking around if you're on the bottom, because you could be fired. So if you're like a Shanky and you thought, oh, well, you're losing to everybody. But don't worry, because you're set for life. We're always going to take care of you because we appreciate what you're doing. You say, well, okay, so I'm never going to be a super, super, super star, but I'll always be a WWE star, and I'll be financially compensated for life. No. And it's through nothing they did. It's not like, oh, well, you did this, so you're fired. That sends a bad message, Mike, and that's what started this whole ball rolling of these WWE wrestlers saying, well, wait a minute.
You know, I kind of wonder, you know. I mean, the old Vince McMahon would understand it. The old Vince McMahon who hadn't stepped back from running a business and all that stuff, would understand this stuff. Kind of makes me wonder who exactly is running the business. If it is Nick Khan and he's not tied to the business, he doesn't know the first thing about the wrestling business in general, and he doesn't understand stuff like this, then is it going to make it easier for him to cut, you know, a Charlotte Flair or Nikki Cross or even one of the men, you know, because he's not tied to the business and he's not tied to these characters and he's not tied to the guys playing the characters or the ladies playing the characters. Is it going to make it easier for him to do this stuff? Because it seems like this isn't Triple H's. A lot of these things aren't Triple H's things because, like we said, he had no idea they were going to cut Samoa Joe, right?
Right, exactly. So that's what I'm saying. Yeah, the short answer to your question is yes, with Nick Khan. And it is a major problem. He sees things, he's, oh, well, you're not using this guy, you gotta let him go. Well, no, wait a minute. Some of these guys have a great reputation backstage, and they're really, really highly thought of. And the real message, okay, their real worth might not be they're not going to sell out Madison Square Garden. They're not going to sell us a pay-per-view. They're not going to be an important part of our show as far as main events are concerned. But backstage, these guys are highly regarded as people who help to put them over, and they see that you can be this and still and will be loyal to you. And when you're not loyal to them, they say, okay, well, then show the loyalty back. See, that's the problem. Anyway, yeah, there's a host of people, folks. I would watch Cesaro, Dana Brooke. I would, you know, I would watch definitely Rhea Ripley, possibly Alexa Bliss, possibly Nikki Cross. There's a few other ones. Chad Gable, a few other ones. We'll see what happens there. Let's get into what we're missing in professional wrestling. Something very weird happened to me last night. I was in a very strange mood, and I said, I need to get a grip on how come I'm not enjoying professional wrestling like I used to. And I'm going to be very honest with you. I'm not. Do I still like it? Yes. Do I still have that passion that I used to have for it, where it's just like, man, when it's coming on, it's, I can't wait, you know. Good, wrestling's on. No. And I said, you know, it's not me growing up. It's not me changing. Something's wrong. Something's wrong. So I did something really odd. I decided I'm going to go on Tubi TV, and I'm going to watch the first couple of shows from the first season of Lucha Underground. And 10 minutes into Lucha Underground, I'm saying, God, this is great. This is exactly what professional wrestling is supposed to be. So I know it's not me anymore. What has happened here is twofold, in my opinion. And this is just one of the things I miss. I miss when professional wrestling didn't try so hard to convince us it's a sport and it's legitimate. It's not. And two, to be all woke and everything has to be, you know, perfectly acceptable to everyone because it's not supposed to. I watched the very first match on Lucha Underground, season one, which was Blue Demon against Chavo Guerrero Jr. Was it a great match? Was it a five-star match? No. Did it make me miss wrestling? Oh, boy. did it ever. I said to myself, "This, I love this." The look of the building, the announcers, the concept, storyline involved in it that seems legit. It was great. And right up to the end, when we had Prince Puma, who's Ricochet, and Johnny Mundo, who's Morrison, Johnny Drip Drip, right? Both, well, one of them's not fired, and the other one is. One's not being used. Put on a match that would put most anything in AEW or WWE to shame. And by the way, this was a brand new show where nobody was really familiar with the characters. Who knew who Prince Puma was? I'm a huge wrestling fan. I'm like, I don't even know who the guy is. But you see, they had set it up so well, didn't they? Because what they did on this show was they said they had the owner, which was, what's his name, Dario or whatever, tell Conan backstage, I hired this guy, an American wrestler. I hired him to make an example of him because he does not respect this temple or what it comes to. He's just here for the money. He's just here for the fame. He's an egomaniac. And the sooner we crush him, the sooner we get people to respect us and realize what we're doing. And Conan says, I had the guy. You wanted the best in the world, I got him. And tonight he'll do that for you. Well, that's Prince Puma. Now you have Vampiro say, Prince Puma may be one of the best and most impressive wrestlers I've ever seen in my life. And Morrison's taking some time off. Johnny Mundo's taking some time off. He might have some re-rust. This kid could very well beat Johnny Mundo. But I'm telling you now that Conan's a snake in the grass. Conan's out for himself. And if this kid's being trained by Conan, he's being indoctrinated. Conan is poison. Well, what does this do, you ask? Well, it adds a double layer element, doesn't it? You're saying, well, this guy's obviously a face. Prince Puma's a face. Apparently his manager's a heel. He may be being led astray by somebody who has some dirty dealings with the owner of this company. The announcer fully understands that this guy's a snake in the grass, but he also understands the potential that his charge has, that Prince Puma has. Johnny Mundo may be egotistical and out for himself and out for the money, but he doesn't deserve to be crushed because some millionaire decides you don't respect me. And during this match, which was a really, 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 really good match, all of those elements came together. And at the end, when he's supposed to give the winner $100,000 and instead he has them attacked by personal acquaintance of mine, Ricky Reyes, going as Cortez Castro and some other people, we see, wait a minute. There is a weird unison between these two. These two mutually respected one another. They had a great match. Conan's not happy. And Conan says, that guy's not your friend. I'm your friend. You have one friend in wrestling, and that would be me. And the sooner you realize that, the farther you're going to go. Well, this complicates the plot tremendously in just episode one. You say, well, we haven't a guy that you're saying is an egomaniac and whatever, but at the end of the day, he seemed like a pretty nice guy, and he certainly seemed to respect Puma. Puma, apparently, is the future of pro wrestling and a tremendous talent, but he seems to be involved with the wrong people. And even the announcer knows. So now, where's the loyalties going to lie? You have established such a plot line in a 1 hour. You have established a plot line between four characters, maybe five, that really has depth. And do you know why that is? Because it was written by television writers, not necessarily pro wrestlers who said somebody's going to come out and attack them with a chair and challenge them to a steel cage match. No. It was written by television writers who said, we got to put some depth in these characters. So you have Dario Cuarto there or whatever his name is, and you know he's a scumbag. You know he's got some dirty dealings. You got Conan sitting across the table with him, and you say, well, you know what? He's the devil himself. So I don't even know which one's worse. You got a guy caught in the middle of it, which is Prince Puma. And of all things, you got Johnny Mundo, who may be a bit egotistical and may be a bit full of himself and may be a little bit of a cheater and a con artist, but he ain't nobody's fool. And you start to wonder, well, where's this all going to go down? What's going to happen? This is episode one. This isn't episode 20. Mike, that is classically what's missing from wrestling, and that is the depth of a storytelling.
Right. And not only that, and you've got a guy in Vampiro who's not pure as the white wind-driven snow. We know this from what he's done before and what right. he would go on later to do in Lucha Underground, being not only a commentator but a manager. He's not as pure as the wind-driven snow, and he's saying you can't trust Conan. You know, we can't trust Dario Cueto. And what was the overall feel of this because of what they did with these police officers and stuff like that, it was an illegal underground fight club, right?
Right. Now, you could argue that later on, Lucha Underground jumped the shark, too. That was the death of Lucha Underground, is that they said, we got to get more outrageous. We got to get more crazy. We got to get more where people were actually being murdered. And you say, well, that's when you're out, because you say, well, now I can't. Now it's not working for me. But this first season was gold. And this first episode of the first season was gold. Because like you said, you had Vampiro, who everybody knew his hands aren't exactly clean. And he had real life beef with Conan. So you didn't know, is Vampiro really lying? Is Conan actually a good guy who's doing his best? There was a lot of depth. Put it that way. There was a lot of depth. And what ends up happening is, in the midst of this great storytelling and depth of character, you have Ricochet and John Morrison, who could have put that match on in WWE and did fight in WWE. I'm near as close to putting on a match like they just did in Lucha Underground for several reasons. One is some of the restrictions that the WWE didn't want them to do certain things, but the other was because it didn't mean anything. The WWE had these characters on their roster for a year, and it still didn't mean as much as Lucha Underground, who had them on their roster for one episode. Because you fleshed them out. You took a look at Johnny Mundo and said, yeah, he does look like an arrogant prick. He looks like one of those guys that thinks his shit don't stink, and he's good-looking, he's talented, and he's this and that, and it's all about him. But at the same token, you got Dario saying, I hired him to make a fool out of him. And you're like, well, I sort of feel sorry for this guy, in a way. I don't think this guy's going to make a fool out of Morrison, out of Mundo. But wow. And then you have the announcers, which is Matt Stryker and Vampiro, and they did an excellent job because they're talking real stuff. They're saying, look, Mundo's been out of the game for a while. If he hadn't been out of the game for a while, this might go differently because he is, in fact, a top-level athlete. But then when they saw Prince Puma, they're like, this guy's incredible. Where did he come from? Who the hell does these type of moves? Mundo's not going to be able to overcome this because he's just got too much ring rust. You can't overcome a guy like this with the athletic ability that this guy has when you've been out of the game for 3 years. And then there are times when he's looks like he's going to beat Prince Puma, and they say, yeah, see, that's the thing about Mundo. He's got such experience, and he knows everything about the game, and that could be his big advantage, is that Puma's green. He's got all the talent in the world, but he's not Mundo when it comes to experience. And that's going to play a factor. And then you got Vampiro saying, Johnny Mundo's not winning this fight. This kid is just too good. And then Mundo does win. And they say, damn, I mean, what a match. They didn't give away the ending. They didn't say, there's no way Johnny Mundo's winning. There's no way Johnny Mundo's winning. One guy saying he's going to win. The other guy saying the other guy's going to win. One guy saying Mundo has too much experience. The other guy saying, no, I think, you know, the ring rust is going to hurt him. You don't just have one guy saying, I will bet my house and my life and everything else that he's not going to win, and then you know he's going to, which is what Corey Graves always does. So we really didn't know who was going to win. They pulled another great thing on episode one. They had Son of Havoc get in the ring and find out his opponent is Sexy Star, a woman. And he's like, I ain't fighting a woman. Get out of here, honey. Just go take the count out and save yourself an ass whooping, because that's what's going to happen to you. And Vampiro saying, uh-oh. He don't know Sexy Star. I know Sexy Star. This is not the woman. You do not want to do this. Son of Havoc does not want to do this. Not, you got the wrong woman here. She will kick his ass. I'm telling you. What happens? She pretends she's going to get out of the ring, takes a five count, and then attacks him from behind, beats him up for a little while, but guess what? He wins. He wins. Because that's logic. And you say, well, yeah, man, she is tough. She took that guy to the limit, and she's going to be a force to be reckoned with in the women's division because she almost beat this guy. But she didn't. Now, every person in that arena said, oh, she's going to win. He's telling her she's no contest. He's calling her, you know, you go back to the women's division. You don't fight men. There's no way this guy's winning. He won. Todd, that's the type of stuff that makes you want to continue to watch.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Yeah, like you said, that first episode of Lucha Underground, when it first came out, it was one of the best episodes I ever seen in a long time. That match with Puma and Guerrero there.
Oh, it was Puma and Morrison, yeah, Mundo. Blue Demon and Guerrero. But yeah, the bottom line is, when that went off the air, and the little vignettes they shot backstage where Dario Cuarto goes to, I believe it was Chavo Guerrero, and says, you didn't beat Blue Demon. You disgraced yourself. Now I got to call in somebody who's going to do it. And I got news. That $100,000, not only you. It felt real. It didn't feel like cheesy backstage nonsense. It felt like, this is real life. It's gritty. It's raw. It's edgy. But it had some basis in reality. Mike, they did more in that 1 hour show to set up future shows than the WWE's done in 6 months.
Right. And think about this. We generally, you know, the WWE would generally bill stars and stuff like that back in the day. What happened with Sexy Star? She eventually got big enough that she appeared in the ESPN body issue.
Yeah.
You know, of their magazine. That's how big she got. And she, this wasn't a WWE superstar, you know? I mean, look.
No. That's true.
You know, that's the deal. And look, it also helped that Mark Burnett, hell of a writer and a producer himself, was one of the producers, and maybe he had something to do with writing it as well, but was one of the producers on Lucha Underground. So they had Hollywood talent helping them out.
Yeah, and they shot it on film, which makes it a little better and made everybody look a little better and a little grittier and a little tougher. But even at the end, where Mundo and Prince Puma's jumped, and Cuarto comes out and says, these guys work for me, you realize, okay, this guy's definitely the bad guy. He's got an agenda here. I'm not sure exactly what the agenda is, but there's some agenda that we don't know about. And then they introduce these guys, which is Ricky Reyes as Cortez Castro and his partner. And they introduce another guy, Big Rick. He's a giant. He looks like he could snap the ring in half. But what do? Does he immediately get in the ring and start kicking people's ass? No. In fact, in episode two, he lets these guys get beat. His guys get beat, and he's just watching them, saying, "Oh well, okay." But you knew what was going to happen. You knew it's a matter of time. It's a matter of time till this guy steps in the ring, and then what? They made you anticipate it. Now, the argument against Lucha Underground is they went too far. And there's no question they did. When people started being able to vanish in a puff of smoke and people were actually being murdered, it's like, please. Now you've lost me. So they couldn't resist going to Hollywood. They thought the more Hollywood we go, the better. Wrong. You had the perfect exact formula season one. The exact perfect formula. Wrestling is missing that. Wrestling is missing Matt Sydal and Vampiro saying, this is not for six-year-olds with brightly colored T-shirts on. This is for adults. This is a hard, gritty combat situation. We're missing that. We're missing that tremendously. Then I went and watched some ECW. And I watched the Sandman versus Sabu. It was a very sloppy match. Some of the tables almost broke before they went put the people through them because they always removed the, I personally removed some of the iron rails from the tables for them. And it was very sloppy. Sandman was obviously drunk. Sabu was doing his best, but he flubbed a few moves too. And but the hardcore audience didn't care. And the reason they didn't care is because they put themselves in those people's positions and said, there is no way on earth I would do that. There's no way in the earth I would climb the top of a ladder and just plummet myself headlong through a table. And if I did, I would probably be dead. So those people saw these guys as they're doing shit that there's no way just normal people can't do it. That's also missing from wrestling. When you see these guys and you say, well, it doesn't look, you know, some of the things they do don't act tough and take care of each other. They're not really, you know, you can see they're not really fighting. Well, I don't know. It looked like for all the sloppiness and all the mistakes, it still looked like the Sandman and Sabu were really fighting. And I think a little bit of that is missing from pro wrestling too, where you can literally suspend your disbelief and say, I don't know if you'd take that kind of punishment if you're just dicking around. I mean, you're going to sit here and tell me you're going to do all that stuff and you already know you're losing? You know, it's easy to, for a fan to suspend your disbelief and say, these guys must really not like each other, when in reality they do. But it's easier to suspend your disbelief, Todd. I think a lot of that is gone from wrestling, too.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, with everything is going wrong right now in the world of professional wrestling. Like that match with Sabu and Sandman, you said that match was like sloppy, but fans didn't care. They didn't care how the match
No, they
went.
Didn't. And, you know, Derek in the chat room said, look, it's all about fun. Well, see, that's what people are not understanding. If you talk to some wrestling fans now, they're like, it's not about fun. Like UFC is not about fun. It's fun to watch UFC. But it's not about fun. It's about two guys fighting, really fighting, and who's the better athlete and who has the better skill set and who got, you know, the best shots in or who got lucky or who did what. It's fun to watch these two guys' skill, but it's not about the fun. Wrestling is about the fun. That's all it is, because they're not really fighting. So it is all about the fun. It's okay to do some of these things. You just have to be careful. Lucha Underground went in one direction way too far. And WWE and some of the other companies went in the other direction way too far. We're going to convince everybody it's a real sport. And it's just, or we're just going to say, you know what? You know it's not a real sport, but we're going to show you the high athleticism of these athletes and show you as many flippy flips and this, that is possible. Nobody cares. If there's no storyline, nobody cares. I cared more about the characters in Lucha Underground, in 1 hour than I did in WWE. I cared more about Prince Puma in the first hour than I ever cared about Ricochet. I cared more about Johnny Mundo in the first hour than I ever cared about John Morrison. Chavo Guerrero, when he was in the WWE, except when he hooked up with Eddie, was boring. And nobody gave a damn about just Chavo. 1 hour of Lucha Underground, and I gave a damn about Chavo because I said, okay, well, how dare that guy talk to him like that? I mean, he had a good match with a legendary person, and now this guy's telling him, well, you're nothing? What do you mean? And saying you tarnished the legacy of the legendary Guerrero family and stuff? Where's that going to lead? Chavo's not going to take that lying down. It's, you know, something's up. Every minute of Lucha Underground, you kept saying, something's up. Something's going to be up with this character. Something's going to be up with that character. And don't tell me, well, AEW is doing the same thing. Where's Angelico? Go watch Angelico from Lucha Underground. How come that guy's not one of your top stars then? That guy's better than half of the people on your roster. If you watch the first season of Lucha Underground and you get into where Angelico shows up, this is a guy who should have been a major, 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 major star in professional wrestling. Major star. But he needs the fleshing out. Some of these people need their characters fleshed out. Sexy Star is not a great wrestler. She's a good wrestler. She's no better than Charlotte Flair. She's no better than Becky Lynch. She's no better than Asuka. But she got fleshed out. They showed who she is. They showed what she's about. They had a legitimate pro wrestler say, oh, no, wait a minute. You're messing with the wrong woman, I'm telling you. This is not the woman. She will kick that guy's ass. And, okay, ultimately she didn't because they respected the fact that, well, logically, she really shouldn't be able to beat this guy. She'll give him hell and prove how tough she is. But logically, he's going to get the upper hand. What does that do? That draws heat to him. What does that do? That gives her the pop and the rub that she's real, real tough. So they literally accomplish more with that than they would have if Sexy Star had have won, Mike.
Right, and that's the thing, and it eventually led to her becoming. Now, granted, she took her character way too seriously at times, but it led to her being respected so much that she ended up getting in that ESPN thing, you know. And I'm looking down the list of their roster here. You know, they got the Mac, they got, well, Jeremiah Crane is, what's his name? I'm blanking on his name now. He's in Impact right now. I'm blanking on his name now, but he's there. He was there. The Mac, you know, all these people that are that was there. That you know, that are good guys. And you're right. Where is Angelico? You know,
he's in AEW, but they're not doing much with him. And I mean, Isaiah Swerve Scott comes from there, right? He was get the character he played in Lucha Underground, but Deadshot, was it, or something like that? And, of course, a couple other people in NXT came from there. But they're not getting the same reaction. Because you're not fleshing these characters out. And when you do, you're doing it in the corniest possible way. In other words, who would react like Chavo reacted to that loss? I'm embarrassed. It was my first match on Lucha Underground. I lost it and I tapped out. Now I got this guy in my face saying I disgraced my family. You got the Prince Puma who's looking starry-eyed at Conan, who's a legend, saying I'm being trained by a legend. Whatever he tells me, I'm just nodding my head saying, okay, all right, okay. But in my gut, I know something's not right. I don't see this guy as my enemy necessarily. They're reacting in ways that are logical. They're not doing goofy things. They're not Charlotte Flair throwing a pie in the face of Toni Storm. and saying, oh, that, does that make any sense? They're not playing poker in the ring. They're reacting in a way that you say, yeah, well, that makes sense according to the storyline. You see, you make a decision. Do you want to be a zany screwball comedy, or do you want to be a drama or a thriller or an action movie? And you can have elements of a little bit of all of it, but your main foundation has to be one of them. So there are federations who are based totally on more comedic, satirical stuff. That's fine, because we know where you're coming from. If we don't like it, we don't have to watch it, but that's where you're coming from, like GLOW. You have some that are based on, I guess, just supposed athleticism and whatever, which is AEW. Fine. You have some that are based on, you know, more dramatic, like ECW used to be, more violent, action-oriented. But in reality, if you have no foundation, if you're just like, we're all over the place. 1 minute a character is going to be deadly serious. The next minute he's going to be coming out doing dancing and singing. Okay, well, then we don't believe he's anything. We don't believe he's anything. We believe he's just playing different characters that you're giving him. Cosplaying whatever role you want him to play. I want to see real reactions. I want to see human reactions. I want to see people who make sense to me. I want to see people say things that I say, yeah, well, that's probably what I would say too in that situation. Or I understand how he feels, even if I don't agree with it. I want those honest emotions. We're not getting them in professional wrestling anymore. We're getting this way over the top. Nobody would do this. How come one wrestler, not one, says, if you think for 1 minute, that I have trained my entire life to chase somebody around backstage for a belt that doesn't mean anything, you've lost your mind. And if you think that holding this belt and having to run every time you enter an arena is somehow prestigious or wonderful, you must be on drugs. Who the hell wants this belt? It means nothing. However, I'm going to take it, because when I take it, I'm changing it. And that's not going to happen anymore. When I get it, I'm going to defend it in the ring, and it's going to mean something. Because this is a joke, and all of you people, you're being laughed at. You're serious athletes, and you're being made fun of. This is the company's version of throwing the dog a bone and watching them fetch it, and then taking it away from them and watching them fetch it again. If you want to be a bunch of dogs chasing a bone, you should retire. Suck it up, be the athlete you want to be, and let's do something with this belt. And let's not let the powers that be make fun of us anymore. Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be great? And people would say, oh, okay, this 24/7 belt's going to end up meaning something. How come they can't all get together and say, you know why we're here? Because we're the undercard. We're the people they're laughing at. We're the people that they say we're not qualified to go against the champions, the real champions. So here's your meaningless do-nothing championship. Go chase each other for it backstage like a bunch of dogs chasing the same bone. We should all be embarrassed. We should all be ashamed. Instead, we're doing it. We're performing like circus animals for the higher-ups. Stop. They can't control us. If whoever has this belt, start defending it like a man or a woman, whatever the case may be, but do it. Then if you had Sonya Deville and Adam Pearce say, that's not what we're doing here, you are going to do what we say, then you've got an issue, don't you? You've got some wrestlers who say we're not going to be made fun of, and quite obviously higher-ups who are saying that's all this belt is good for, and there's conflict, and there's drama. But when the athletes do it voluntarily and dress up as ninjas and dress up as, park benches and things, and no one believes it. And then they always pin each other with just a little schoolboy roll-up that anybody could kick out of. If you're a trained athlete, you're a professional wrestler, and you can't kick out of a little schoolboy roll-up when you haven't even had any wear down in a match? You've just been running around a park somewhere? So that would be something that you could correct and say, yeah, okay, that's great. Some guy's actually making a push to be the locker room leader of the underdogs, the locker room leader of the C squad, and saying maybe our belt doesn't mean as much as the major titles, but it means something to us, and we're going to defend it the right way, just like they do. You don't see Roman Reigns running around backstage with Brock Lesnar chasing him around and Drew McIntyre chasing him around. How come we're worse than they are? How come we're being treated like this? Wouldn't that make more sense, Mike? Wouldn't that be something that the fans could buy into and say that this could get good?
Yeah, it could be. But then again, this is the same company that fires a guy who later becomes a dinosaur and is now a big star in AEW, in Luchasaurus. Remember, the WWE had him, and we once thought that he would eventually join Bray Wyatt, right?
Right.
And then they fire him, and he goes to Lucha Underground, does some work there, and now he's with. Now, granted, they're using him kind of in a way to promote Jack Perry, but he became a big star in AEW, you know?
I guess my point is, if you want comedy, don't make it your whole undercard. You've got a whole bunch of people that you're using for nothing, and you've got a championship that means nothing, as opposed to a real good storyline where people can say, I understand these people's emotions. If we can't relate, if you're reading a book and someone says, oh, I lost my job and my wife left me and the rent is due and I can't pay it. I'm going to go get wasted. You say, I understand where that character's at. That would be my instinct, too. I might not do it, but I understand why that guy's doing that. I understand why he's trying to drown his sorrows. However, if that guy says, oh, man, I lost my job and my wife left me and I can't pay the rent, so I guess what I'm going to do is I'm going to dress up in a clown outfit and I'm going to go do flips in the park, you'd say, well, what? Who does that? Nobody in their right mind, so you would not take it seriously. You'd say, well, I don't know who wrote this, but that doesn't make sense. So if it doesn't make sense, I can't relate to the character. There's no point in me continuing to read a book or watch a movie where I can't relate to any of these characters because everything they do does not make sense. That's what wrestling feels like now, where you say, none of this makes sense. Even when they come up with a good idea, Mike, for instance, Seth Rollins is supposed to be the architect, the guy who's the smartest and the most cunning, and he doesn't realize that Kevin Owens, he doesn't say to Kevin Owens, just go get me disqualified. Come in there and throw the fakest punch you ever possibly could imagine. I'll go down like a shot. They'll disqualify Bobby Lashley. And then if it didn't work, you'd say, well, it didn't work because of Sonya Deville and Adam Pearce, but yeah, of course. He's going to come up with something like that. But as good a job as Seth Rollins did at saying, oh, man, that's brilliant, and thinking about it, it made Seth Rollins look like a complete idiot when he's supposed to be smart.
Right. And how – I mean, he was supposedly the architect of the Shield, right?
Right.
He put this thing together. He got it together. And his – one of those guys is gone now, and that's Moxley, but that has nothing to do. He's supposed to be a smart, smart guy. You know, he's supposed to be this brain guy, and you're destroying that aspect of his character by doing this stuff. You know, I mean, if we wanted all comedy, unbelievable stuff, you know, stuff that's just illogical all over the place, we'd be big fans of Chikara, you know?
Well, that's exactly right. And again, it's not even that so much it's comedy, it's just that you have led me to believe that Seth Rollins is a very cunning, devious, smart individual. Now you want me to believe he's so stupid he didn't realize I could just get disqualified. And that would be great. See, that doesn't work because you've built him up as a character who's very smart. That's why it doesn't work. You have, because now I'm looking at it saying, what, you expect me to believe Seth Rollins couldn't think of that? It just dawned on him after Kevin Owens did it. I don't like it. As much as it was a fun angle and he did it real well, I can't buy that Seth Rollins is that dumb. That's why it doesn't work for me. That's why I like MVP so much. When he says things, it makes sense. Things he says, you're like, okay, well, that makes sense. For instance, when Goldberg's son got attacked, MVP says, I'm not, a normal heel would have said, good for the little bastard. Too bad we didn't snap his neck in half and make Goldberg watch. That would have been the greatest thing in the world, to make Goldberg watch his son get paralyzed by Bobby Lashley. No. MVP said, dude, we had no way of knowing that's your son. Somebody just jumps on his back. And the next thing you know, the minute I found out, I was telling him, let him go. And he let him go. And you say to yourself, I don't believe a word that's coming out of MVP's mouth, but that is what he would say. That's exactly what he would say, because that's what you would say if you were in that situation. So I believe MVP as a character. He doesn't take it overboard. He doesn't say, Drew McIntyre's so overrated. He don't know a wrist lock from a wristwatch. It'll be easy for Bobby Lashley to destroy him. 5 minutes. We'll send him back to Scotland. He never should be in a ring again anyway. No, he says, I'm not an idiot. Drew McIntyre is a top-level athlete, and he's going to give Bobby Lashley hell. We already know. We're not dumb. We know he's a major threat to this title. But that doesn't mean Bobby Lashley's going to lose. We're prepared for it. And you say, see, that's what I want. Because that makes sense. Why do you think the Roman Reigns angle on Friday night made so much sense? Because when Paul Heyman said, I'm not trying to protect Brock Lesnar from you. I'm trying to protect you from Brock Lesnar. You understood in a heartbeat what Paul Heyman was saying. He was saying, I've clearly told Brock, I'm not going to take sides here. I'm making money on both of you. I don't expect you to try to cripple or injure him in any way, shape, or form. You guys want to fight, fight, but fight fair and fight honest and may the best man win, but I don't want to see you. I don't want you to purposely go nutso like you did on other people. Capable of, let's just have a real wrestling match here. And Roman Reigns realizes the Brock Lesnar I fought before, that's not Brock Lesnar at his full. Paul Heyman was holding him back to a degree because Paul Heyman was somewhat loyal to me. But Roman Reigns don't want to hear that because his ego will not allow him to believe that Paul Heyman told Brock Lesnar to take it easy on him. So in his anger, he fires Paul Heyman, gives him the Superman punch, and guess what happens? Brock Lesnar comes out and decimates everybody. Underlining the point, Paul Heyman was correct. If you let Brock Lesnar just go be Brock Lesnar, he's going to fuck you up. And now Roman Reigns realizes it. This is not the same Brock Lesnar. This guy fucked us all up. And Paul was right. Paul was protecting us from him to some degree. It makes sense, Todd, and that's why that angle works so well.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, that angle right there, that spotlight on Friday night fired Heyman and gave him a Superman punch. That's right there. That's a face turn right there for Paul Heyman. Most definitely. That's a face
it
turn.
It almost feels like it, doesn't it? But at the same respect, Roman Reigns doesn't say, I knew you were a sneaky little snake in the grass, son of a bitch. Get the hell out of my ring, you fat bastard. He didn't say that. He said, I want to thank you for everything you've done for me in the 40 years you've helped my family. For that, I truly am grateful to you. And he gave him a hug. And then he said, incidentally, you're fired. Meaning, as much respect as I still have for you, and as much as I appreciate what you did, you hiding this from me is an unforgivable incident, and we have to sever our business relationship. And then out of ego, because he realizes in his heart of hearts, Paul Heyman, the guy I've trusted for so long, does not think I can really beat Brock Lesnar at his best. And he was trying to protect me. Makes perfect sense. Because it makes perfect sense, Mike, that's why we believe it.
Right. And another reason why we believe it is we know Paul Heyman's history. As far as his character goes, his history of being this low-down, like snake-in-the-grass type guy that just soon turned on his mother than anything, right? So when he says that what he was doing was protecting you from him, well, how can you believe him knowing his history, right?
Well, you see, that's where it comes in good, Mike, because you say to yourself, is he telling the truth? Does he really like Roman Reigns that much that he says, you know, I have served your family for 40 years. I do respect your entire family. I really do care about you. And because I care about you, I know what Brock Lesnar's capable of, and I know what he wants to do. And I told him, don't, seriously. Okay, these guys are my friends. You can fight each other in a respectful manner. Let's not go there. Maybe he's telling the truth. If he is, shines a whole new light on things. Maybe he's lying, and he stabbed Roman Reigns in the back. If that's the case, maybe it's time the bloodline's getting a face turn. Who knows where this is leading? But that's the beauty of it, Mike, is that we're not really sure, was Roman justified in what he was doing, or was Paul Heyman really telling him the God's honest truth, that in my heart of hearts, I know that if I unleash Brock Lesnar, he can't beat him. Not that Brock Lesnar. Maybe in a fair contest where there's no, you know, whatever, that this violent nature of Brock Lesnar to destroy people has been ebbed because he's a friend of mine and I've told him, let's not go there. Maybe that Brock Lesnar you can beat. But the Brock Lesnar who's just out to destroy people for fun, that's not the guy. Maybe he's telling the truth. So we don't even really know who the heel and the face is in all this, Mike, and that's why it's a great angle.
Yeah, and the Brock Lesnar that is sitting here doing what he's doing with Sami Zayn, you know, how can you say that Brock Lesnar is going to destroy somebody when he's doing that, when he's doing this comedy angle with Sami Zayn, right?
I mean, yeah, I guess, but at the same token, I mean, Sami Zayn clearly put him over and said, look, I know I can't beat you, you know, and I'm not even going to confront you. You tell me to do something, I'm not fighting you, so you're fine, you know, whatever you say goes. The issue is we know who Sami Zayn is. This is why Sami Zayn works, too. We know who Sami Zayn is. Sami Zayn is a guy who you have portrayed as a character. And the character you portrayed to us, Sami Zayn, is sort of a Daffy Duck character. He talks a good game, but he's really a chicken. He tries to talk his way out of every situation, and he blames everybody else for his lack of success. When push comes to shove, he's the guy who will say, no, I don't want any confrontation, I'd rather not. But boy, if he gets a chance to stab you in the back, he will stab you in the back. And what makes it even worse is that he can back up some of it. He's not a complete loser. He knows what he's doing. So when Sami Zayn reacts that way to Brock Lesnar, you say, well, that's the Sami Zayn I know. Now, if Sami Zayn had stood up and said, I have been in this business for I don't know how long, and I'm not afraid of anybody, including you, Brock Lesnar, we'd be like, well, that doesn't work. That doesn't work because that's not who Sami Zayn's character you've told us is. just like if it was the Undertaker in that ring and Brock Lesnar grabs his hand and says, you're going to have the title shot tonight. And he says, okay. We wouldn't believe it because we'd say, well, that's not the character that we know. That's not how that character would react. So the deal is when you actually have a character, the writers have to write in a manner that we say, yes, that's logical for that character. And when things are not logical for that character, then it sucks because we just disconnect and say, makes no sense, so we don't like it. And I think that's what's missing. One of the things that's missing from wrestling, Mike, is that we no longer have writers who really, really study the characters of the guys they're writing for and say, what would this character do in this situation?
Right. Think about it this way. Back, 8 months, a year and a half ago, what was one of the top things that was happening in WWE at the time? It was the whole relationship between, Mandy Rose and our big boy there was Chad
Otis,
Gable,
yeah.
You know, Otis. And all that stuff, him giving hams and all that stuff, that fit his character. And when Mandy Rose, you know, yeah, I know it was a comedy angle, but it was a well-written thing.
And
it made sense. It made sense for her. I mean, he's not the type of guy that a girl like her would fall in love with, you know, the character of her would fall in love with, but she did. You know,
see, this, Mike, is what we're talking about when I say psychology. Why this angle was so good, and you're correct, it was so well written, is because it did two things. It made a sort of a lovable, childlike guy into Otis, where he says, I've done what so many guys who are so out of a girl's league do. I fall for a girl who's so completely out of my league that I have no chance. And it also breaks the stereotype of every hot girl in the world has to have a guy with perfect, this and that. What ended up happening is the girls who watch it, the women who watch it, said, yeah, that's right. We're not all superficial gold diggers. We don't need guys with six-pack abs. We want a guy who cares about us and is a nice guy. It's about time somebody portrayed us the right way. The guys watching it said, God, if a guy like Otis could get a girl like that, I probably could. It worked psychologically. Both of those characters over. So what did the WWE promptly do? Destroy it. Destroy it. Just like they did a million times over again. Made logical sense that Rusev and Lana, the way they were portrayed, perfect sense. Then they have to make Lana, practically a hooker. When really what always should have been portrayed was from the very beginning when they were both heels and she was so anti-American and hated the world and hated everything, all it really was she was in love with Rusev. And Rusev didn't realize it until later. And then when he does, they have a bond. And that bond is not going to be broken. And anybody who tries is in for it. Because then you become a really relatable character. And you say, these people have always loved each other. They just didn't realize it. Now that they do realize it and they're on the same page, that's not going to be good. Whether they're heels or faces, that's not going to be good. And you had it, and you had to destroy it. That's what the WWE does on a regular basis. They have a great character with absolute logical progression, and then you say we're going to jump the shark and do something that's so completely out of the loop that it destroys every single thing about that character, and then you say, I wonder how come that character is not popular anymore. Because you destroyed it. That's why. How about if Stone Cold Steve Austin one night came out and instead of drinking a beer and coming out there with the breaking glass, came out on Matt Riddle's scooter drinking Kool-Aid? and say, well, it was funny, though, wasn't it? Wasn't that funny? Yeah, you've ruined his character. He wouldn't do that, so now we know he's acting about everything. What made Stone Cold Steve Austin so great is you said, I believe that's him. I believe if I bumped into him on the outside of the ring, that's exactly who I'm bumping into. That's the key that's missing. One of the keys that's missing in wrestling, Todd, is believable characters that you actually say, I believe that guy is exactly who I'm seeing on TV.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, with these characters we see on TV. Like, let's go back to the Otis and Mandy Rose angle for a second. There was another dude who tried to interfere. Was Dolph Ziggler, who tried to ruin the love interest between those two.
Exactly. And again, that's logical, because you look at a guy like Dolph Ziggler and you say, yeah, that's the type of guy Mandy Rose would like. And to be honest, she did. She said, I like Dolph Ziggler's a good-looking guy. I'll go out with Dolph Ziggler. But then when she realized what he was, a different attitude. All that was perfectly logical. That's why it worked. The WWE doesn't seem to understand that logic and character progression is crucial. You can't have a character that does something so out of character that you no longer believe the character at all. Rambo, let's take Rambo for an example. You have Rambo who just jump headlong into any battle, right? Well, what happens if some guy half his size in the ballroom says, you ain't nothing, and spits on him, and he says, I'm leaving. I'm leaving, don't worry. You'd say, well, wait a minute, that's not what Rambo would do. Rambo would just fuck that guy up. So now how am I supposed to believe he's going to jump out of a helicopter and screw up the whole entire Russian army? This is the problem. When you have a character, your writers have to dedicate that their work to making sure that everything that character does follows who that character is. And the person portraying that character has to understand that you have to do something logically. It doesn't mean you always have to be that same character. Let me give a weird example. I was watching for a long time. I watched Good Times, the show with Jimmy Walker and all that. It was a way early show before most of us were born. But you can see it today. And I'm watching this, and this character that is portrayed by Jimmy Walker is kind of a goofy kid who's, he's artistic and he's fun-loving, but he's a goof-up. And he's deathly afraid of his father. And anytime his dad says, do something, okay, Dad, okay, Dad, okay. But there's an episode in which he refuses to allow his daughter to go out with this guy or get engaged to this guy. And he stands up to his father and says, you're wrong. And his father says, repeat that. And for once, he doesn't just say, oh, no, you're right, Dad. He says, you're wrong. You're wrong. And because his father realizes he's never done that before, this is totally not what he would do. His father realizes he must believe this in his whole heart and soul. And it makes a difference because you say, at the end of the day, his fear of his own father is not stronger than his sense of right and wrong for his sister. That's good writing. It's illogical to that character because that character was always cowardly toward his father, but come up against something like this, it's logical that he would be moralistic enough to say, no, I have to object. That's fine. If you have a character one day do something slightly out of character because there's extenuating circumstance, that only furthers that character. But if they just do it every week, it's different. You have Drew McIntyre running around. He's 6 foot freaking seven. He's 265 pounds. And he's running around chasing people with a sword, threatening them with a sword. Like, you need a sword to take? You need a sword to intimidate Adam Pearce? Why? Why the hell would you need a sword? If somebody like that was after you, that's intimidating enough, Mike. So again, it's out of character because it's almost like Drew McIntyre saying, I need backup to go challenge Adam Pearce.
Right, but you see, if you're him and you're 5'9", And Adam Pearce is what, 6'1", 6'2"? Yeah, you definitely need a sword because you're not that big, right? I mean,
or if he's attacked by like six guys, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing. They generally consider they love to create the WWE recently loves to create disconnects.
It's a very good point, Mike. It's a very good point. All I know is this. If I want to root for Drew McIntyre, you want me to root for Drew McIntyre, I really don't think Drew McIntyre needs to carry a sword around threatening to hit people with it who aren't even qualified professional wrestlers. It's one thing if he's jumped by a whole gang of people and he gets to the sword just to chase him out of the ring and you're like, well, yeah. I mean, if it comes to that, you're going to defend yourself. You got six guys beating you up. I guess if I had the chance of grabbing the sword just to intimidate them, I would. But you don't have to take it back to one guy because then you look like a bully. And I don't want to root for the bully. See, the writing is so bad and the character developments are so bad. This is the problem. And it's not just a problem with WWE. You went over and you portrayed Malachi Black as this loner, this psychopathic, dark, occultish guy who just got out of a mental institution or whatever. And now he's going, oh, I'll form my own little group of people with Andrade. That doesn't make any sense. Now what you're doing with him might make more sense. But what the hell are you hanging around Andrade for? Logic, folks. Logic. Everything on Lucha Underground's first season had some logic behind it. Everyone had a motivation. Dario was trying to... Well, we know what he was eventually trying to do. I won't ruin it for people who haven't watched Lucha Underground to its conclusion. Conan was just a grifter who's like, I know the business better than this guy, and I can make some huge money off this dude, and he won't even know that I'm grifting him. Because his motivations were sketchy. And then as each new character was introduced, they all had a reason for being there. They all had a goal. They all had a backstory. They all had something that made them unique. That's not the case anymore, Mike, and I think wrestling really misses that.
Right, and look, I've always gone back, particularly with the WWE, one of the things I like to go back and watch is the whole Raw walkout angle with the WWE and when they were trying to get Triple H to give up his COO, whatever it was, and that was a well written, well performed thing. And I don't want to say the payoff, but one of the payoffs to the angle was that whole Monday Night Raw where you had Sheamus and Triple H and John Cena and what's his name, and of course CM Punk come out there. And basically, you know, one of the things CM Punk said at the time was, you know, well, was written for him was, I feel like I'm basically anything controversial around here starts with me. And he said, I made walking out look cool, but I wasn't here to prove a point to one person. I was trying, my contract was coming up, and I was trying to prove a point to the company.
Not right, like and all of that makes perfectly logical sense, and that's why it worked. They have stopped making perfectly logical sense now, Mike, and now it's just becoming, you know, whatever. For instance, we had on SmackDown, Cesaro gets his ribs injured before the match, and instead of them saying, no, you are not allowed to medically compete, he gets to go in as an excuse to lose to Ridge Holland, which doesn't make Ridge Holland look better. How does that make Ridge Holland look better that, okay, well, he beat Cesaro after Cesaro's ribs were cracked? Why? It wouldn't even make any sense. He wouldn't let the guy in the ring, so we're just like, whatever, it's just an excuse to lose, we get it. Anyway, aside from the Roman Reigns angle, there was not much good on SmackDown. Not much good at all. Tony Storm winning the match was terrible. It looked phony. It was just awful. I'm gonna give it a only because I give the Roman Reigns angle an A, and very close to an A plus. I'm going to give this show a C minus. I really don't think the rest of it held up at all, and it's a one trick pony over there on SmackDown. It's everything Roman Reigns does is good. Everything else is going to shit. Todd, what rating you give SmackDown this week?
I'm going to give it a C minus as well. The only thing I like was
Reigns. Yeah, that's all anybody. What do you say, Mike? Better or worse than C minus?
I'll say C minus, and frankly, Toni Storm is another one that, you know, I don't know what her character is supposed to be. I don't know, you know, what it is, and she's another Triple H person, and I'm not sure how long she's going to be here.
That's a good point. I guess she's supposed to be some girl who's hooked on, like, 80s music, or I don't know what the hell she's supposed to be either, to be honest with you. I don't know. All I know is fleshing her out at all. It's just like, bring out this girl, and now we're elevating her automatically. Wait a minute. You've given her no backstory. You've given her no reason, no motivation, no nothing. It's just, I got hit in the face with a pie. That's your motivation? You got hit in the face with a pie? God almighty. All you should do is watch Lucha Underground, some of these writers, and understand very clearly what they did in season one. Yes, they screwed the pony in season two late and season three especially by going way, way, way too far. But that doesn't mean you have to. All you have to do is see how they made these characters who in some cases weren't even all that articulate to speak on a microphone into very interesting characters who people cared about. And everything they did during the course of their program fit that character and what that character would actually do. That is a big plus in professional wrestling. The second thing is, please look like you're really fighting. Much like the Sandman and Sabu, please look like you're actually having a match. You're actually trying to win, not you're just trying to get all your moves in. Number three, bring back the fun. Like Derek said, bring back the fun. Let it be fun. Again, don't worry about what people are saying. Oh, Madcap Moss and Happy Corbin's terrible. At least it's fun. Bring back some of the fun. Let us have that drama and fun and everything that pro wrestling used to be. Go back a few years and do some watching. Last night I did, and I realized what's wrong with professional wrestling. And I hope, I pray that it changes. Because right now, it's going down a path. It's not going to survive that much longer this way. It's just not. It's overexposed. It's not all that interesting. And the ratings bear me out that fans are just not watching like they used to. We'll see you on Tuesday with the Monday Night Raw report.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. WrestleChat Radio is a Savage Blade production.